This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. After a brief break, consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh is back with the latest in orthopedic medicine. And he's had an interesting run on ankle and feet cases recently, from what I understand. And we're here today to talk about just that. Dr. Rajesh, welcome back.
Thank you, Lin. It's nice to have had a break and refresh the mind and body.
So, foot and ankle. You know, when I first heard that we were doing this today, I thought, I wonder if we've done that before. And I don't think we have. Why did you want to talk about it today?
Okay. Look, I think we've alluded to some of the concepts in the foot and ankle in the general orthopedic arena. But the thing that I really wanted to bring out today was the idea that the foot is an organ of balance, right? So the concept that I want our sort of readership to imagine is, imagine now suddenly, poof, somebody waved their magic wand and your feet were now skates, right? So like ice skate skates. So what would you need to do in order to be able to walk on those skates? Because for those of you who have worn ice skates or even rollerblades, it's really, really difficult to walk on rollerblades. And the reason why it's really difficult to walk on rollerblades or skates is because they're not adapted to walking on uneven ground, which feet are. So there's a just today I saw this gentleman who had a terrible motor vehicle accident 20 years ago, and he'd smashed his foot and ankle into very many places, and some kind orthopedic surgeon reassembled it for him in lieu of having an amputation. Now, he's had chronic foot and ankle pain for the last 20-something years now, which he happily puts up with, except that at this particular time, his ankle arthritis is progressing to a point where one of the bones in the ankle called the talus has collapsed. So ordinarily, you think, well, you know, that's a bad situation. You have arthritis and one of the bones has collapsed. But if you think about it in the balance model, it's actually better for this gentleman now that the talus has collapsed, because what he had was he had a stiff, painful, non-compliant foot. After the bone has collapsed, what he has is he has a supple, compliant, painful foot, which is obviously much better than a stiff foot. So the idea is all we have to do now is to manage the fact that his ankle's a little bit sloppy, right? But it's extremely compliant.
So pain is not always a bad thing then?
Okay, the question about pain is always really, for me, A, what is the structure causing the pain? B, what process afflicts that structure? So this gentleman came in to me and did a very interesting set of symptoms. He said, the back of my heel hurts really badly. My Achilles tendon hurts really badly. And there's this pain which goes down the front of my ankle every time I walk. All right, so going through his x-ray, I look at his x-ray and I go, look, your bone has collapsed completely and it doesn't explain your symptoms. The pain that you have is inconsistent with what it is that I see on the x-ray. So if it isn't coming from bones, yes, you know, you've had arthritis for 20-something years. Your pain's not coming from the bone. Where is your pain coming from? And that sort of question of, that sort of formula of having to identify the structure from which the pain comes from and the process affecting it, and then nextly what causes that process, is actually a very interesting challenge. And it can only be done by speaking to the person, having a really sort of clear understanding of what the person feels is going on, and also the specific circumstances in which the pain comes on. So for this particular gentleman, he had collapsed bone, okay, but his pain was coming from the fact that his Achilles tendon was very inflamed. His Achilles tendon was inflamed because his joint was inflamed. His joint was inflamed because the bone had collapsed. So once we addressed that small piece of inflammation, his pain went away completely.
Is there usually this sort of process being applied in terms of diagnosis, especially for orthopedics? Because everything is connected, as you point out. You know, it's, you can't really look at an ankle in isolation from a calf or from the foot. So is that usually the way of it, that you have to look at it in its entirety?
I think that's probably the way it should be looked at, right? So it should be looked at in its entirety. So this gentleman now, having hobbled on this painful foot, has now injured his knee on the other side because, you know, I was away and unfortunately I wasn't able to attend to him. So, yes, the idea of you know, imagine just putting on this pair of skates again, right? Skaters or people who are on their rollerblades use their whole body to balance themselves. So sometimes people will come to me with, you know, having, with saying, you know, I've had this foot pain for a year now, and also now I've got back pain. Well, it's kind of no surprise that if your foot hurts, your back's going to hurt, because you have altered biomechanics in trying to walk. And when you have altered biomechanics in trying to walk, especially as you don't get younger, your ability to compensate becomes a lot less.
So I'm wondering how many people listening to that will be thinking, ah, I've been having foot pain for a while and I haven't been to see the doctor. I mean, at what point are you supposed to do that? Because I think we've all had the odd, you know, niggle or the odd, oh, my heel hurts today. But, you know, a painful heel is not necessarily a reason to immediately run to my nearest friendly orthopedic surgeon and seek help.
Yep. Okay, so I think the recipe for rest is basically probably 3 days. So, you know, if you're off heavy activities for 3 days, you've had a bit of opportunity for rest, and you go, okay, now I've had a break. At the end of that, if your pain's not better, or if you find that every time you do a certain activity that it hurts, then that's probably the time to ask the question, well, what's going on? So every time we look at feet and ankle, the first thing that we look at is footwear, right? So if you have a particular pair of shoes that's worn in a particular way, that's probably saying to you, look, maybe there's something going on with my footwear. If you find that feet hurt in a particular type of shoe every time, so I had this lady who's got an interesting set of problems. But the thing that sort of got my attention today, actually, was the fact that she has big toe pain and swelling whenever she wears heels. So she's not vertically enhanced, so she enjoys wearing heels. And it's kind of, it's this funny situation where she says, okay, you know, every time I wear heels, my toe swells. So I've got this budget of how often I can wear my heels, which is very logical. But I asked her the question, well, shall we try and find out why your toe is swelling? And the answer is she's got wear and tear at the base of the great toe. She's got arthritis at the base of the great toe. She's in her late 40s. And when I see her today, she's got a corn plaster on the undersurface of the foot. Well, why does she have a corn? She has a corn because the biomechanics of the foot's altered. The biomechanics of the foot's altered because of the arthritic process. So the understanding that my corn is caused by the arthritic process in this joint that is altering my foot biomechanics wasn't there, right? So I think that when you talk about foot and ankle stuff, this idea of balance is really, really important. The fact that you're balancing on with the natural human foot, you're balancing on a tripod. You've got your heel at the back and the 2 points of pressure in the front, because that's usually where the skin gets thick and callosities occur. Lots of things are involved in maintaining that soft tissue tripod, right? So there's an articulated skeleton. Yes, there are bones. That's what everybody looks at the x-rays. With those bones comes a set of ligaments. With those ligaments come a set of tendons and muscles. And with those tendons and muscles come the nerves that control them. So you really have to sort of look at it in the entirety of how's this machine running when you really want to look at foot and ankle problems.
So far, we've been talking about things that we do to our feet or things that happen in the course of living, you know. And I'm just wondering whether we all start with perfect feet that we then ruin through our lifestyle. You know, is it that we have great feet and then we put on heels and slowly these things start to pile up?
Okay. So I'd like to say that everybody is different. So everybody is different on the outside. We're also different on the inside. So I'll get parents who bring their kids in with flat feet and saying, my child's got flat foot, do something. Say, well, do you have flat feet? Yes. Does your husband have flat feet? Yes. Does your entire family have flat feet? Yes. So if the entire family's got flat feet, what's the bother with the child having flat feet? You know, is it that it's painful? Is it that they can't do certain things? What's the problem? So, you know, it's like someone coming in and saying, my nose isn't quite that same as everybody else's nose. I need to get my nose fixed. Everybody's nose is different. Everybody's foot is different. So to answer your question, yes, all feet are born perfect, except those obviously with congenital disorders and things like that. But, you know, the average foot is perfect. The problem is our feet have to have a relationship with the external environment, which is rarely within our control. So if you think about human evolution, if you think about the sort of different genetic groups and where they evolved, the ethnic groups that evolved in mountainous ranges have genetically different feet. The ethnic groups that evolved on flat plains have completely different feet. So the sort of the stereotype is that for very high arch feet. So some people have a very high arch foot. In some societies, they're seen as attractive. In other societies, they're seen as not attractive. Some people have very flat foot. In some societies, they're seen as desirable. In other societies, it's seen as not. But each foot was evolved to adapt a particular environment. That's why those feet are shaped the way they are. You know, that's why mountain goats can't live on plains. And that's why plain sheep can't live on mountains. They're built differently.
We're speaking about ankle and foot injuries today with Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. As always, our phone lines are open. If you've got any questions about your ankles, your feet, or anything else to do with orthopedics, really give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh. Together, we're talking about ankle and foot injuries and trying to ask everyone to imagine what would happen if your foot got turned into a skate and how that would affect your life and your balance. So we've been talking a little bit about how it's all connected, how different things affect your feet. What are the usual suspects? You know, what are the things that do tend to cause these sorts of things to get thrown off?
Okay, torn ligaments is one. So that's probably the single most common sort of vulnerable area which occurs in the foot. So someone will have walking down some uneven pavement on any of our beautifully paved Malaysian streets, step off the curb while they're tending to their mobile phone, twist their ankle and go, ouch, that really hurt, hobble along, go back to the office, put some ice on it. Maybe see a doctor, maybe not see a doctor, maybe have an x-ray that's normal, maybe not have an x-ray. But basically, things kind of settle down from there. And then what happens is they say, my ankle keeps giving way on me, right? So that's the start of what I call the wobble, where if you're on your skates or on your rollerblades and you're coasting, you start to wobble. And if you don't correct the wobble, then you fall over.
We have a call from Anthony. Good afternoon, Anthony.
Hello.
Hi. You have a question for Dr. Rajesh?
Yeah, I've just had a humerus fracture mid-shaft and a bit of angulation from the shoulder downwards. I'm just considering to proceed without an operation, but just want to know what condition would cause me to seriously consider an operation.
Okay, Anthony, couple of questions. How young are you?
I'm 64.
You're 64, okay. What other question do I have? Is it your right hand or your left hand?
My right hand.
Your right hand. And you're right-handed, I'll assume.
Sorry?
Are you right-handed?
I'm right-handed.
Okay. Does the pain stop you from sleeping at night?
No.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Anthony. Okay, so let's take that question. So Anthony's question was, he's broken a bone in the arm. And there's the option of having to treat it with an operation or treat it without an operation. So he's trying to make a decision of what should I do. So that basically comes down to the question of what do you need to achieve. If you say, I need to go back to work tomorrow, I need to go back to work next week, then an operation will allow you to do that. If you say, the pain's unbearable, I can't do anything, I can't look after myself, I can't sleep, I can't eat, I can't bathe, then an operation is obviously something that will allow you to get back to function early. If you say, well, yeah, it's broken, but, you know, kind of doesn't really stop me from doing anything. You know, I can do all the stuff that I would normally do, except that it's broken. And, you know, if I respect the fact that it's broken and I wait long enough, it'll probably heal. So, Anthony, to answer your question, if you don't have a nerve injury associated with it, the pain's manageable, the position on the x-rays are reasonable, then you have no wobble. You know, the upper limb's very dexterous. It will accommodate quite a lot of imbalance as opposed to the lower limb, right? So I hope that answers your question.
Well, one thing I am curious about is, you know, if you proceed without getting it, I guess, without getting it operated on, with the assumption that the word you used there was if you respect the fact that it's broken, how do I know that I'm doing that, though? I might think I'm doing it, but I might overcompensate and then end up with a strain somewhere else or an injury somewhere else.
That's where you need to have your healing and care guided. So that's a very, very valid question, because a layperson would not necessarily know what to do or what not to do, what the associated injuries are. So in these sorts of situations, I've seen people have come in with, you know, their arm basically taped onto their chest for 6 weeks. And then they go, you know, here's an x-ray that shows it's lovely and healed, but I can't lift my shoulder. So I think Anthony really needs to have his care guided in the sense of, well, okay, exactly the question you asked. What's the respect I need to show for this? What are the rules of engagement here? So certainly making sure that the shoulder's mobile, making sure that the elbow's mobile, making sure that you exercise the fingers, trying to get some of that swelling out. It's all really very nuanced. Then you need to be under the care of a professional. It doesn't have to be an orthopedic surgeon. Maybe a competent general practitioner who's seen lots of stuff like this. Maybe a well-experienced physiotherapist, a chiropractor, anybody who can guide you through this sort of little maze that you find yourself in relation to the skeletal system. So it's not probably something, as you rightly put, Linda, which can just be left, right? It should be guided as part of the healing process.
A question now from Mike. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi, good afternoon.
Your question?
Hi, everyone. I actually bought a pair of ankle boots a few months back, and I was wearing them for about a month or two. Now, what has happened is my feet started to swell within those shoes, and, you know, pain followed soon after. So it's actually been like that for a few months now. I actually did go to a neurologist to get my nerve conduction studies done, and she's cleared me, saying the nerves are all fine. A blood test has cleared me off of any pre-diabetes or diabetic-related complications. So one of my GPs actually said that this could be now varicose veins, which have been caused by the trauma from the boots. So I'm just asking the good doctor if, you know, if that could be a case, and, you know, and what should my, you know, next course be. Being honest, I've been on painkillers now on a regular basis, 2 months already, just to kind of manage the pain that follows and the swelling that happens at night.
Very interesting. I take it you're diabetic.
No, I am not. I am
you're not diabetic?
I'm not.
Okay.
I did a blood test and that was clear.
Okay, and how young are you?
I just turned 40.
You just turned 40. How high were these ankle boots?
Regular height, they were just about maybe 4 or 5 inches above the ankle area.
Like as in...
They did not have laces, so they had the sort of extendable sides.
The elasticated sides.
Elastic as well.
Very interesting. So they're not like those sort of lace-up military boots kind of thing?
No, just slip-on ankle boots.
Slip-on ankle boots with foot swelling. Very interesting. Okay. Thank you for that call, Anthony. So was there something else you wanted to say?
Just a little more. I actually run regularly in the morning. I do 4 or 5 kilometers run.
Right.
And then I shower and I leap into these boots and I spend the whole day in them. So the problem was, you know, when I took them off, the swelling happened and then the pain soon followed within the weeks to come.
Interesting. Okay, so sounds...
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Sounds to me like your boots may not be the culprit, right? Sounds to me like, well, let's look at what the purpose of a shoe is. The purpose of the shoe is basically to adapt your God-given foot to a man-made surface. That's the purpose of a shoe. So given the parameters that you describe from a shoe, it doesn't sound like your shoe is impeding that function in any way. The style of shoe that our military wears, you know, sort of the army boots, those have a particular problem with them. And that problem is basically where the lacing is so tight that it serves the function of giving extra rigidity, but it also causes impingement on tendons and nerves that pass through the area. So that doesn't sound like what's going on here. The fact that you have swelling is probably the most telling kind of thing to me, because The swelling basically says that there's some biological process going on which is out of your usual function of the foot. So the next question I'd really be interested to know is what anatomic structure, what anatomic location is that swelling? So if I could localize that swelling to a particular region of anatomy that I knew, then I would say, well, you know, this is the structure that's swollen. Then I would work out to, well, why is it swollen? And then I'd work out to what process was causing that swelling. But in terms of your shoe versus your running and your age, I think the culprits are more likely to be unrecognized old injury, age, and running. So I think your boots are probably made for walking.
And in the case with Mike now, you know, having such trouble with the pain that he's turned to painkillers, you know, and going to various specialists, running blood tests and so on, what's the next step for him?
Okay, the next step for him is for someone to look at him and say, okay, let me have a look at your feet. Let me have a look at how you walk. So this is the thing about the skeleton. It is dynamic, right? Your liver is not very dynamic. Your kidney is not very dynamic. You know, some hepatologists and nephrology friends of mine are going to kill me. But, you know, they just sort of sit there and do their thing, right? It's not, you know, not like you see a kidney prancing across the room or, you know, liver doing a pirouette.
Something has gone terribly wrong if something like that were to happen.
Yes. But just think about what your skeleton has to do, right? Your skeleton has to do all of that. And you just while I remember, I saw a ballerina who came in saying, I have an ingrown toenail, right? Now, I looked at it and I said, your problem's not the ingrown toenail. The ingrown toenail's just a symptom. And so we did an assessment and basically she has injury to a joint of the big toe such that when she does a pirouette and an on point, the big toe is unstable. So the big toe then bends just a little bit and the nail flicks off, right? So the underlying problem there is the instability of a joint, which is an unrecognized injury, which became recognized because she started training at such a high level. So similarly, in this situation with Mike, I'd really want to do a biomechanical assessment of the foot and look at what are the articulating bits of the foot. How does the ankle fit with the tibia? How does the fibula fit with the ankle? How does the midfoot fit with the hind foot? What are the mobilities of the various structures? And then approach it from a biomechanical perspective rather than from an anatomic structure perspective.
We have another question here from Azman, also to do with running. Good afternoon, Azman.
Good afternoon. A very good day to you guys on BFM.
Hi. Your question?
Okay, my name is Azman, and I'm 45 years old. The problem with me is when I do jogging, I get pain at my shins, you know. Say maybe after running about 15 minutes or so, then I have got this piercing pain at my shins. Some people tell me it's got to do with my fitness level, so I'm not so sure. And because of that, that basically deters me from doing my running. So maybe doctor can just give me some explanation to why I suffer from this pain.
Okay, so Osman, a couple of questions.
Yes.
What's your body mass index, do you know?
Okay, I am about 172 centimeters.
Right.
I weigh about 78 kilos.
172.78. Okay, would you consider yourself to be heavy, medium, or light?
I consider myself to be a bit on the overweight.
A little bit on the overweight. Okay, yeah. That's good honesty for you. Yeah, me too. I fall in that basket. Okay, do you normally run, Azman?
I hardly run. I cycle more, but when the thing is, when I cycle, I don't feel this pain. When I run.
Yeah, okay. Other than running, do you do anything like, say, for example, a cross trainer or a stepper machine?
No.
Okay, so it's only running. Okay. Do you smoke cigarettes?
I don't smoke.
You don't smoke cigarettes. Okay, Azman, I think that's probably all the information I need.
Thanks, Azman.
Thank you.
So let's get to the wobble when you're skating again, right? So in order for the feet to work, for you to get up and create that locomotion, you have to be balanced. Like a bicycle that's moving or a pair of skates which are actually gliding. What Azman's describing is he's describing the wobble, that point at which the system starts to get a little bit unstable, and if you keep going, you're going to fall over. So the fact that you don't run regularly And the fact that the pain comes on at a certain exertion probably says to me that the culprit is going to be either at a muscle or a tendon, or the junction between a muscle and a tendon, where it's overloaded. So the, I mean, and this is different from shin splints. You know, shin splints are a particular condition that affects runners who run a lot. So you suggested sort of your general fitness level. I wouldn't pin it on your general fitness level. I'd look at the biomechanics of your running, and I'd look at how are you running, and are you running in such a way that a particular group of muscles are overloaded? And if you are, then it may just be a simple thing as changing your running technique a little bit. And all that'll do is it'll just push you to the next limit, which means you will get to the next structure, which you will stress, and that next structure will complain, and the next structure, and the next structure, and the next structure. But that's how you build a better machine. So if you're seriously interested in running, I think that it would be worthwhile attending a simple running workshop, you know, running with someone, having someone look at your running gait, and look at, is there something which can easily be corrected in terms of how you run? And then I take it on from there in terms of assessing things.
We have another call here from Chauvin. Good afternoon, Chauvin.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Your question?
I have a question, doctor. Like, every morning when I wake up, I have this severe pain on my foot. And this has been going on for like maybe like a couple of years. And people say it's like plantar fasciitis. I'm not sure whether I'm pronouncing it rightly. And like, there's few exercises which I've learned to stretch my feet, and then that sort of gives like immediate relief. However, it just keeps coming back over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of basic questions. Do you smoke cigarettes?
No.
How young are you?
Relatively young, I guess. 35, yeah.
45, you know, it's
no,
that...
No, 35.
35, my God, yeah, just a wee
you
baby.
You just added 10 years on me, doctor.
Sorry, how long have you had this for?
Probably a couple of years.
Couple of years, so probably about 33. That's a little bit early. Any change in work circumstances recently? The job that you do?
Not really, doctor.
Not really. Okay. No. Let me think. What else did I need to know? You told me you didn't smoke cigarettes. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Look, the condition you have is called plantar fasciitis. Okay. So let me sort of give you the analogy when we come to skating again. The plantar fascia is one of those structures which is under constant stress when you stand up. Every time you stand up and you take weight on your feet, there is a particular structure that's under stress. If that's, okay. And that structure will wear. So we get to this sort of wear, tear, repair model where you've got wear and tear for a particular structure with not enough repair. And in that wear, tear, repair model, you're having pain. So it doesn't mean that more pain equals more wear and tear. It just means that in the wear and tear process, you have pain. So if you're doing the stretching and the stretching relieves your pain immediately, I think you have the wrong concept, which is the fact that the stretching is necessary to relieve my pain. The truth is the stretching is necessary to reverse the process causing your pain. So those exercises that you read on the internet, they're all probably very effective. What I'd urge you to do is I'd urge you to do them regularly, regardless of whether you have pain or not. And regularly means, you know, stretching that particular structure to the order of 5 or 10 minutes a day, regularly, every day for 3 months, regardless of whether you have pain or not. And that'll probably make a difference because the plantar fascia repairs with the correct amount of tension, it wears with the wrong amount of tension. So you need to get the balance of tension and repair versus tension and degeneration to get that fixed. And failing that, come see me. I have needles. They fix everything. Sorry, go on.
I'm sorry, doctor. I mean, is it different than flat foot and everything? Because is there like some like certain kind of shoes to help the pain or to how do you say, to expedite the repair process?
No, because think about it. The shoe is an adaptation for God-given foot to man-made structure. So if you wear any shoe that fits you well, is reasonably comfortable, all it does is it stops excessive wear and tear. It doesn't help with the repair.
Okay.
The repair comes with you stretching it in the appropriate manner.
All right.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, doctor.
Oh, okay, then. Thank you.
Chauvin, if I could just interrupt and ask you a question.
Sure.
Why haven't you been to see a doctor?
I've been to a couple of doctors, and I've got like, I haven't got any relief. But they taught me the same thing, like calf stretches and like foot stretches, which does work actually. But I'm looking at it as a long term. Is there anything to do? Because some doctors suggested to take celery, a sort of like new nutrition. Like pills, celery-based pills.
If you tell me that you've already sought medical care and you're consistently not better, then I think it's worthwhile considering the differential diagnosis, which is what else can cause heel pain, which is not plantar fasciitis. Okay. So there are some nerve entrapment syndromes which can occur around the foot and ankle, which can mimic plantar fasciitis. And, you know, you're a little bit young to have plantar fasciitis, and it doesn't sound like there are any risk factors or pre-existing causes in you. So I would probably, if you tell me that you've already had professional healthcare advice, I'd probably re-look it with the view of what else could it be.
I've broken my ankle before, but this happened on both of my feet. So I'm assuming it's not the
Okay, so let's take our skating example, right? We've got our skates on. We're on a wobble. So you really got to work out what is it in the skating that's giving you the wobble, and get rid of the wobble so that you can glide smoothly again. And certainly your ankle injury may be one of the things that's contributing to the wobble, but I get the impression that that's not the only thing that's contributing to the wobble.
Okay, sure, doctor.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Chauvin.
Thank you.
Okay, we are still taking calls today. We're talking about ankle and foot injuries. Our phone lines will remain open. We're taking a short break for market update. I see that we have some questions that have come in via text. We'll get to you right after this. In the meantime, though, keep those calls coming. You can ring us at 03-77-109-000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are still listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We're talking about ankle and foot injuries. If you've got any questions on either of those or on anything to do with orthopedic health, really, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Okay, now to get to the texts, which have been coming in. Andy wants to know, I used to have heel pain, but after using arch support, it's better. Recently, though, I'm having pain at the base of my big toe. It gets worse if I lift the toe up. Is there any remedy?
Okay, so the thing that you've described there, Andy, is the jack test. So I said to you, there's a structure called the plantar fascia. The plantar fascia connects two areas of bone together. One is the heel bone at the sort of base of your foot at the back, and the other one is to the front of your big toe. So it sounds to me like what you had was you had this wear, tear, repair thing of your plantar fascia going on. By using the arch support, you transferred the load from the back of the plantar fascia to the front of the plantar fascia. So to answer your question, what you should be doing is you should be looking up simple plantar fascia stretching exercises and doing those religiously for a period of 6 weeks to 3 months. And if the pain still doesn't get better, then you'd need a formal assessment as to, is it actually coming from the plantar fascia or is it coming from associated structure? Because one of the things that I've seen is you put an arch support in, yes, it supports the back of the foot, but then it irritates another part of the foot.
We have a call here from Amin. Good afternoon, Amin.
Hello.
Hi, your question?
Okay, so I have a condition called Langerhans cell histiocytosis. And it's made a lesion in my T12 vertebrae, which caused partial fracture. The lesion has already been treated with radiotherapy, but I'm just wondering, because the oncologist and hematologist that I've been consulting with, they haven't really talked about, you know, how this is going to heal. It doesn't seem to be having any pain. I don't feel any pain through the nerves from that vertebrae. I'm just wondering what feedback the doctor can give me about this.
Interesting question.
Any questions for Amin?
Okay, so with regards to that lytic lesion, where is it? Is it in a vertebral body? Is it in a pedicle?
I forget what it was in the. I've had some in the that were on the wings. This one was more in the center of the vertebrae.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And do you know that your disease is in remission now?
It is not in remission. It's still being treated. I'm being treated with chemotherapy.
You're still being treated with chemotherapy. Okay.
Yes.
Let me think. Any other? Do you have much pain in the bone, as in night pain, pain that you can't sleep at night with, or pain that wakes you up from sleep?
No. Most of my lesions have already they've stopped giving me that kind of trouble.
Okay, all right. I think that's all the information I need. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, let me think how I'm going to answer this. What we're looking for in the spine is we're looking for stability, right? The purpose, one of the major purposes of the vertebrae is to provide a bony conduit for safe passage of the spinal cords and spinal cord and associated nerves. So whenever you talk about metastatic disease is where you have a cancer which is eating into bone. The first thing that we think about is this structurally stable? Is there anything which is going to break anytime soon? And if it's going to break, what's going to be the consequence of that break? So it sounds to me like the people who are treating you have made an assessment going, well, this is a lesion which is not very structurally significant. And since it's not structurally significant, it's unlikely to break. And since it's unlikely to break, we're unlikely to need to treat you. Because you have to balance that sort of view or perspective against what is the cost of treatment. The cost of treatment is big surgery. You know, for us to cut the area open, put metal rods and pins in and support the area. So the general thinking with these things is, there's something eating the bone. I stop the thing eating the bone heals itself, just like any other injury or fracture to bone. So the fact that you don't have pain is a very positive sign. The fact that your doctors don't seem too concerned about the loss of structural stability probably means that within their experience of having seen these things, because the sort of histiocytosis that you have is classically in bone, right? So it's not like it's in an unusual location or behaving unusually. So in that sense, it doesn't sound like anything further needs to be done particularly aggressively. But that was just to give you some understanding on how the decision is made in terms of would we intervene or would we not intervene. It's sort of a risk-benefit thing, which is how likely is this to break versus what's the cost of fixing it.
And now we have a call from Jess. Good afternoon, Jess. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Jess.
Hi. Okay, I called just because I've been having foot swelling issues for about 3 years now. And basically, I've been to a bunch of doctors, and a few have told, two actually have told me it's idiopathic edema, which I can't really accept because it just means no reason. But I've seen that over this year, it's been getting a bit better, but I've started to get the onset of pain now. So I'll have swelling for about 4 to 5 hours throughout the day, 2 to 3 hours of which is starting to be painful. So I wanted an opinion on that.
Okay. Some basic questions. How young are you?
I am 26.
You're 26. That's not normal. Foot swelling that hurts in a 26-year-old's not normal. Are you diabetic?
No, I've been checked for diabetes. I've been checked for the veins in my feet as well.
Okay.
They're okay.
Okay.
And I've been checked for kidneys.
And you've been checked for kidneys. All right. So I think those are probably the main areas to cover. I think idiopathic in your case means not identified yet, right? So let me think. What else would I... any family history of something like this?
No. I've checked.
No family history of anything like this. Okay. So, you know, this is one of those, I think I've got enough information. I don't think I'll be able to give you sort of a black and white, but I can certainly give you some sort of understanding.
Okay.
The skeletal system is made up of the same things everywhere, just in different compositions. So you have skin under the skin, you have some connective tissue, in the connective tissue you have some fat, underneath that fat you have this thing called fascia, under the fascia you have tendons. Somewhere in along there, you have veins, arteries, and nerves. So my approach to you would basically be a relatively mechanistic approach to say which of these structures is swollen, where is the swelling coming from, and kind of work backwards from there. The fact that the swelling's painful means that it's obviously causing impingement on some structure, because when the swelling's there, it hurts. When the swelling's not there, it doesn't hurt. And 26 is not sort of in any common deteriorative or age-related kind of basket. So really, without sort of laying eyes and hands, it's really very hard for me to give you more of a perspective. You know, if I wanted to pull something out of the hat, I'd say see an endocrinologist and get tested for diabetes or pre-diabetes, and also check your thyroid function, because these are all things that can affect the fat layer, right? So assuming that the swelling is immediately under the skin in the fat layer before it gets to the fascia. So, you know, people have obviously very correctly checked your kidneys, made sure that you've got no excessive fluid retention. So I wouldn't put you in the idiopathic box yet. I would put you in the not known box first. And if you see a reasonable endocrinologist and they clear you, then you'd probably want to see someone who does things sort of a little bit more mechanistically.
Thanks, Jazz, for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Now we have Rosalyn. Good afternoon, Rosalyn.
Good afternoon.
Hi, your question?
Yes, I've got two concerns, and I hope doctor will help me with this. When I wake up in the morning, my feet are numb, and basically with my hands as well. So I'm wondering if that's nerve damage. And number two, does foot reflexology actually help?
Okay. Are you perimenopausal, Jocelyn?
Oh, yes, I'm 60.
You're 60, okay. So you're past the menopause, it's not perimenopausal.
Way past.
Okay, the reason why I ask is the menopause is related to lots of these sorts of symptoms that you have, and they're entirely transient, right?
Right.
What you have in the hands, I can explain with my eyes shut. What you have, which is basically some tendon irritation, the tendon irritation causes hand stiffness in the morning. And then, you know, you have to exercise your hands out, and then the tendon irritation goes away, and there's nerve compression in the wrist as a result of that. That's sort of relatively straightforward and easy for me to treat. The fact that you have numbness in the feet is probably a lot more complicated, because the cause of that numbness is usually from the back, and it can be, well, I mean, the fact that it's numb means it's a nerve thing. So I just have to work out what nerve thing it is. It's either a nerve thing from your back, or a nerve thing in your foot, and everywhere in between.
And also, doctor, when I sit for long periods of time, like I'm working on the computer, then when I want to get up, the pain is quite bad.
In your feet or in your knees?
In the knees and the feet.
Okay.
The knees is one thing, but the feet are as well.
Okay. I think in you, I would really be looking for a general tendonitis, which means there is some disorder involving irritations of multiple tendons and multiple sites, which may be just a simple phenomenon of aging. So, and then looking for nerve conditions secondary to that. That's probably more consistent with the story that you tell me rather than sort of anything primarily going on wrong.
Okay.
So
and the second one was about the foot. Reflexology.
Oh, yeah, the foot reflexology. It makes you feel good, but it doesn't change anything.
Hope that helps, Rosalind. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And a call from Jasmine about pain. Good afternoon, Jasmine.
Houston, we have a problem.
Hello.
Hi, Jasmine. We are back.
Hello. This is Jasmine.
Yes, Jasmine.
Hi, doctor. I have this problem with my right leg. I hurt my plantar fasciitis last year, and after two injections, I recovered. But recently, this February, it comes back, the pain at the arch.
Okay.
And then, since then, maybe I overcautious about this, taking care of this plantar fasciitis. Then later, in March, I find that the whole area, circumference below the ankle, is very painful until now. Every step I made, I find that the area below the ankle at the same foot very pain. Mm. Plus the plantar fasciitis pain comes back. Mm. I've been on Acosia Celebrex. Mm. When I'm on medication, no pain. But I stop, the pain comes back. Please advise, doctor, how to go about that.
Okay. Have you had injury to that ankle before?
Ankle? Yeah. Well, I was school day time. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So this sounds like the problems a little bit more than your plantar fasciitis. So it sounds like the problems actually old ankle injury coming to haunt you now.
Oh.
And so and the basic process going on there being inflammation, which is why when you take the Celebrex, the pain goes away, because the process causing the pain is not degeneration, it's inflammation. And Celebrex is one amongst many reasonable anti-inflammatories. One way to sort of deduce the problem further would be to not take the Celebrex and use an ice pack. So if you wrap an ice pack in a towel and you ice the ankle down and the pain goes away, then it's a logical deduction that the problem's more likely to be inflammatory rather than degenerative. So then the view of your plantar fasciitis would be to say, well, what structural problem is causing the increased wear and tear that's resulting in this refractory or recurrent plantar fasciitis?
Sorry? I have to stop the medication first, right?
Stop the medication first for 3 days.
And I use the cold...
Use a cold compress, half an hour, twice a day, and see whether it resolves your symptoms significantly.
Actually, doctor, I tried that. When I put the ice pack, it really feel more comfortable.
Okay.
The pain will come back.
Yep, well, so there's some... So let's get back to our skating model again. One of the wheels on your skates isn't bolted on quite right and it's starting to wobble. So that's why even day-to-day use, you're having ankle issues. So I think the question is really you need a thorough assessment of your ankle joint with the associated bones, tendons, ligaments and soft tissues to establish where the mechanical problem is. And then once we identify the mechanical problem, we'll be more in a position to reverse that.
Thanks for the call, Jasmine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I feel the need now to apologize to all the people who've texted because we won't be able to get to you today. I'm so sorry. There's a long list, but we're wrapping up because we are desperately running out of time. So, Dr. Rajesh, what do we do with our feet that are not skates but feet but not working the way they should?
Look at what it is that they were built for, right? So they were built for God-given surfaces. So if you can walk on a God-given surface like, you know, a field of grass, you know, sand on the beach. If you can walk on those structures with your bare feet without much pain or disability, it's probably not that bad. But if you can't even walk on those surfaces without much pain or disability, then there's something structurally going on that needs to be fixed. In terms of what... it's not normal to have foot pain, consistent, persistent, recurrent foot pain in the way that our callers have described. So my question is, seek a healthcare professional who can give you the answer of what structure, what process. If you have the answer of what structure, what process, then you're on your way to reversing the imbalance of the foot.
And that, again, is after trying to give it a rest for how long?
2 to 3 days. Ice packs, love ice packs.
Okay. You know,
best, one of the best things in sliced bread. Tablets, not so much, because if the ice pack can do the job, then you don't need the tablets.
So again, if you've taken kind of, if you've tried to take care of yourself for 3 days and it's still not working out, go check it out.
Yep, sounds right.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking today about ankle and foot injuries. I've been speaking with Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We have to wrap up. We will get to your questions next month. I try to promise now. You're listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.